Our Bible study today takes us once more into chapter 20 of the Gospel according to Matthew. We have already looked at the opening 16 verses in which we have the parable of the vineyard, and that is followed in verses 17 through 19 with the predictions concerning Christ's death. Today we're going to look at two little sections, verses 20 through 28, where we have the plea for preferential treatment, and then the closing verses 29 through 34, the power of Christ in giving sight to the blind. Let us read then the little portion that deals with the plea for preferential treatment, beginning our reading at verse 20. Then came to him the mother of Zebedee's children with her sons, worshipping him, and desiring a certain thing of him. And he said unto her, What wilt thou? She saith unto him, Grant that these my two sons may sit, the one on thy right hand, and the other on the left, in thy kingdom. But Jesus answered and said, Ye know not what ye ask. Are ye able to drink of the cup that I shall drink of, and to be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with? They say unto him, We are able. And he said unto them, Ye shall drink indeed of my cup, and be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with, but to sit on my right hand and on my left is not mine to give, but it shall be given to them for whom it is prepared of my Father. And when the ten heard it, they were moved with indignation against the two brethren. But Jesus called them unto him and said, Ye know that the princes of the Gentiles exercise dominion over them, and they that are great exercise authority upon them. But it shall not be so among you, but whosoever will be great among you, let him be your minister. And whosoever will be chief among you, let him be your servant. Even as the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister and to give his life a ransom for many. We shall pause there for a moment and examine that section before we take the closing verses that deal with the healing of two blind men. Here then is the plea for preferential treatment. Look at it in three little stages. There is the request, followed by the rebuke, and then the result. Notice the request then. This was made by an ambitious mother on behalf of her two boys. But unfortunately, it was the expression of ignorance, because she did not understand all that was involved in such a request. Notice who it was that came. It was the mother of Zebedee's children with her sons. That is, James and John. They were the sons of Zebedee. And she came to the Lord, and mark you, she seemed to come in a correct attitude outwardly. She was worshipping him. And she indicated that she wanted to express something to him. And so he gave her the opportunity. He says, Well, what is it? What's your request? Simply this, she said, that I want you to grant that these my two sons may be given chief seats in the kingdom, one on the right hand and the other on the left. Now, you can see how mothers could be very ambitious for their sons. And he was a woman who had a certain measure of discernment. I say a certain measure. She at least discerned this, that the Lord Jesus Christ was the promised Messiah. That much she acknowledged. She also acknowledged that there would be a kingdom. She had discernment to see this. that if he was the Messiah, then he was the king, and a king one day would set up his kingdom. She had learned these things. And so she was looking forward with anticipation to the king setting up his kingdom, and it's obvious that he would require certain people around him, like a cabinet. However, as she saw her two boys along with the others, she thought perhaps these would be given the chief place. Now, remember this. There were different times in the experience of the Lord in his public ministry when he had shown special favor to these two disciples, James and John. Do you remember when he went up to the Mount of Transfiguration, he took James and John with him, along with Peter. The three of them were with him on the Mount of Transfiguration. Also, when he went into the home to raise the daughter of the ruler of the synagogue, he took James and John along with Peter. So therefore they had been favored in some way. Whether this prompted this good lady to make her request or not, I don't know. But she was anticipating a day when the kingdom would be established and the king would sit upon the throne of rule. That being so, she said, I would like you to grant that my two boys will be with you at that time. Give one of them the seat on your right hand and the other one the seat on your left hand. A very ambitious woman. Now, the Lord, in giving his rebuke, told her this, that if Christ was to enter into the glory of his kingdom, it would have to be through the pathway of suffering. He said, ye know not what ye ask. Are ye able to drink of the cup that I shall drink of, and to be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with? Now at this time it's not the mother that answers, it's the two sons, James and John. They say unto him, we are able. Now here was a woman who had an ambition. Her ambition was to see her sons in the place of glory. But remember this, she had never thought for a moment that the pathway to glory was a pathway of suffering. Go through the Old Testament. Wherever you have predictions concerning the Christ, you'll find predictions concerning his sufferings and predictions concerning the glories that would follow. May I draw on an Old Testament illustration to illustrate this? You think of Joseph, the son, one of the sons of Jacob. He was the favorite son. Do you remember he had dreams concerning glory? When the others would bow down to him, and he would be in the place of rule. That was the dream he had. That was his ambition. But now, what he had to learn by bitter experience was that the path that led to glory, the path that led to the place of rule, was a pathway of suffering. He first of all had to be rejected by his brethren and sold down into Egypt as a common slave, misrepresented by a wicked woman, cast into prison, before the day came when God would cause that he be brought out of prison and ultimately take the place of rule. But Joseph could look back on these days and say it was according to God's plan. He said to his brethren, ye thought it to me for evil, but God meant it for good. And so he learned by experience that the pathway to glory was a pathway of suffering. These disciples of the Lord had to learn the same thing. And so there is the gentle rebuke that's given. Do you think that you can drink of the cup that I shall drink of, and be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with? He was referring here to his baptism of suffering and the bitter cup of suffering he'd have to drink. They say unto him, we are able. Now watch what the Lord said about this. Ye shall drink indeed of my cup, and be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with. But to sit on my right hand and on my left is not mine to give, but it shall be given to them for whom it is prepared of my Father. It's a very strange thing. If you follow through the history of these two men, here is what you find. When you come to the Acts of the Apostles and chapter 12, there you find an interesting little statement concerning James and John, and also Peter, who was usually associated with them. In Acts chapter 12 it says, "Now about that time Herod the king stretched forth his hands to vex certain of the church, and he killed James, the brother of John, with the sword." So it's perfectly true, the Lord said to them here, "Ye shall drink indeed of my cup, and be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with." So James was put to death by the sword. He became a martyr. Now when you come to the last book of the Bible, that is the book of Revelation, you find it's very interesting here concerning John. For John distinctly tells us that he was on the Isle of Patmos. "I, John, who also am your brother and companion in tribulation and in the kingdom and patience of Jesus Christ, was in the isle that is called Patmos for the word of God and for the testimony of Jesus Christ." In plain words, John was suffering. He was exiled to that little barren island in the sea. And there he was, exiled from his own people, cut off from the fellowship of other Christians, suffering. We're not told in the Bible exactly how John died, but according to secular history, he also died a martyr's death. But whether or not we do know this, according to Bible records, he was cast into prison. In the Acts of the Apostles, we learn that. And then the book of Revelation, here he is exiled to that barn little island. And so therefore John was a man who had to suffer. "Ye shall indeed drink of my cup, and be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with." That was the baptism of suffering. So they would have to learn by bitter experience. They would have to pass through the sufferings before they would reach the glory, because after all they were following a man who was rejected, following the rejected Christ, who very soon will be crucified, slain upon a Roman cross. But again, he has reminded them, he be raised from the dead. So we have this ambitious lady making the request on behalf of her two boys. She's gently rebuked. "For he must needs suffer, then enter into his glory. So also they that would reign with him must likewise suffer with him." It's no use thinking that we can be welcome with the world and walk hand in hand with the world that rejected our Christ, and go arm in arm with those that cast them out and put him on a cross, and at the same time expect to reign with him. No, my friend, we take our stand with the rejected Christ. We must first of all suffer with him if we ever expect to reign with him. We're not talking of salvation here. We pointed that out at the beginning of the chapter in connection with laborers in the vineyard. Here we're talking about service and reward. Now, notice the result of this plea for preferential treatment. This episode caused the other disciples to be moved with indignation towards James and John, then opened the way for the Lord to give some necessary instructions to the whole group. You see, after all, if you had been one of the 12, and you heard this woman making the request on behalf of her two boys, and by the way, we should come to grips with this, that these men who were followers of the Lord were only men. They weren't angels without wings. They weren't over pious, if we might say that, holier than thou. They were men of like passions, such as we are. They were liable to be moved with the same ideas. And when the ten heard it, they were moved with indignation against the two brethren. Can you imagine that? Even amongst the apostles, there was a little bit of anger, a little bit of jealousy, a little bit of indignation against the two. When the Lord Jesus Christ saw this, here is what he did. Jesus called them unto him. You see how necessary it is at times for the Lord to take his own apart and speak to them. One occasion he says, "Come ye yourselves apart and rest a while." Here he called them unto him. He had something to say to them, and they are going to listen to what he has to say. He says, "Ye know that the princes of the Gentiles exercise dominion over them, and they that are great exercise authority upon them." They knew that, and we know that. But he says, "It shall not be so among you. But whosoever will be great among you, let him be your minister." That is, let him be your servant. "And whosoever will be chief among you, let him be your servant." You've got to get down and serve. "Even as the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister and to give his life a ransom for many." Now watch this very carefully. A woman has come and asked that in the kingdom that her two boys would be given the chief seats, the places of authority. She wanted them to be rulers. "I want one on your right hand and one on your left hand." And the Lord has given a gentle rebuke. The others, of course, perhaps were thinking the same thing. What position would they have? Do you remember what Peter said back in chapter 19? Peter said, "Behold, we have forsaken all and followed thee. What shall we have, therefore?" And so there is the possibility, you see, that even those who are disciples of the Lord are thinking of themselves and the positions they were going to have in the kingdom. Now, I have pointed out again and again in these studies that prior to the crosswork of Christ, these disciples that were following him didn't understand the nature or character of the church. They were only occupied with the kingdom. And even after the resurrection, when the Lord was walking down the road to Emmaus, recorded for us in the final chapter of the Gospel according to Luke, you'll discover this, that these two that were walking down there, and the Lord drew near to them, they said to him, "And we trusted that it was he who should have redeemed Israel." See, they're telling him that this Jesus who had been crucified, they had trusted that he should have redeemed Israel. That is, he should have delivered us from our enemies. And he should have set up his kingdom. That's what we trusted and that's what we expected. But all our hopes have been shattered. They were still thinking in terms of the kingdom and their Messiah reigning and ruling, and they being associated with them in the kingdom. But now, he's telling them here something different. They're angry with one another because each one is jockeying, so to speak, for a position. Now, he chose them the correct position for them. He said, "You've not to act like the Gentiles, you've not to act like the ungodly, but rather this is what you've got to do. If you want to be great, then you'll have to get down and be the servant. And then, not only so, but he shall be great among you, let him be your servant." So therefore, he's teaching them here that service is the greatest thing they can offer. Isn't that exactly what he taught in the parable of the laborers? That if they went out and served with the correct motive, then of course the owner of the vineyard would give them what was due. He'll make no mistake. Now, he said, if you want to be great, you'll have to learn how to serve. And if you want to be the chief, remember, you'll have to serve. So the greatest person among you would be the man that does the service, the one who gets down and is the menial servant, the bond servant. Now, in order to emphasize this, he said, even as the Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister, and to give his life a ransom for many. So here is now the example of the Master himself. The Master didn't come expecting people to serve him. He came in order to serve. The Son of Man came not to be ministered unto, but to minister, that is, to serve. And his service would take him right to the very end of the line, when he would give his life a ransom for many. It would cost him something. It would cost him his life. He would have to go to Calvary. And so his service ended at the cross, so to speak. There he was willing to carry out the will of the Father. Now, if you want to be chief, if you want to be great, take your example from him, so to speak. And he said, if I've come to minister to you, I've come to serve you, then you'll have to be prepared to serve one another. It's not a matter of being jealous of one another, trying to get the top seat, trying to get the place of rule, but rather get down. And the principle in God's realm is the way to get up is by getting down. Humble yourself under the mighty hand of God. He is looking for laborers, not for dictators, not for rulers, but for laborers in the vineyard. So he said, I want you to labor. I want you to be a servant. And so this episode, while it caused the other disciples to be moved with indignation towards James and John, nevertheless it opened the way for the Lord to give some necessary instructions to the whole group, and thus to us. At the present time, this principle still stands. He that humbleth himself shall be exalted, but he that exalteth himself shall be abased. Now, moving from there to the end of the chapter, you have the power of Christ in giving sight to the blind. As they departed from Jericho, a great multitude followed him. And behold, two blind men sitting by the wayside, when they heard that Jesus passed by, cried out, saying, have mercy on us, O Lord, thou Son of David. The multitude rebuked them because they should hold the peace. But they cried more, saying, have mercy on us, O Lord, thou Son of David. And Jesus stood still and called them and said, what will ye that I shall do unto you? They said unto him, Lord, that our eyes may be opened. So Jesus had compassion on them and touched their eyes. Immediately their eyes received sight, and they followed him. Now the two men may not see with their eyes, but the confession of their lips is worth noting. They confess him as Lord and Son of David. This brought criticism and rebuke from the crowd, but it also brought compassion from the Lord. Their request was granted, and they followed the Lord as he went toward Jerusalem. While there was the blind Pharisees leading the blind, that is, they were morally blind and spiritually blind, and they could not discern, here's two men who were physically blind, but they had a kind of spiritual discernment. They said, here's the Lord, he's the Son of David. No doubt they had heard concerning him opening the eyes of the blind. This was their passing opportunity. He would never pass this way again. He was on his way to the cross. They laid hold upon that passing opportunity, and they cried to him, O Lord, thou Son of David, have mercy on us. It's remarkable, while the crowd criticized them and told them to hold their peace, the Lord had compassion on them. Is there anyone listening to my voice now, and you think you're despised by the multitude, and people want nothing to do with you? My friend, the Lord will have compassion on you. Why don't you cry to Him? And He said, "What will ye that I shall do unto thee?" If you'll cry upon Him, my friend, remember this: whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved.